Government studies here, private studies, inform messages from Europe, all agree that we are in for a rough year with the Russians in various places. They are once again beginning to probe and push and test. No informed person here thinks they will carry any of these initiatives to the point of risking war, but the strain will be considerable. Berlin is always regarded as a kind of thermometer for the Cold War, and right now it is heating up again. Few think they will push this to the point of another blockade, but they are certainly going to force us to give a kind of de facto recognition to the East German communist government, because Germans will replace Russians on such projects as air lane control, and we will have to work with them. It is another step in the Russians' long process of bringing about German unification, if it comes at all, by a deal between the two German regimes and not by free elections. Berlin and the Mideast, these are the certain plague spots for the coming months. Pakistan, another country to fall under military rule, is shaky. There is worry here about Iran and rather acute worry about Iraq. The stretch of land inhabited by the Kurdish tribes is a natural corridor between Russia and the heart of the Mideast. This stretch involves parts of Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Turkey. The Turks will probably hold fast, but we may see a Russian-inspired effort to set up an independent Kurdistan that might work in the shakier countries. Communism by no means equates with Nasserism, and such a move, among other results, may block Nasser's ambitions in the northern stretches. This could serve a double Russian purpose, for it would tend to shift Nasser's efforts to Africa, to the Sudan, and to Libya, where we have a vital air base. Morocco is already demanding we quit our bases there. Tunisia's Bourguiba is already seeking arms from communist countries. France has not yet proved she can settle the rebellion in Algeria. Hypothetical peace in outer space does not yet compensate for turmoil across North Africa and the Middle East, in the view of most responsible authorities here. This is Eric Severide in Washington. Political reporters possess a broad streak of romanticism. They tend to put their emphasis on the adjective, not the noun, in the term political science. Persons attract or repel them more surely than programs. Party weighs less in their measurements than personality. And they are always instinctively looking for individual men cut in a pattern a little larger than life. They are always prepared to be disappointed, and usually are, but they go on looking. Around the beginning of 1952, a sudden rash of articles and columns appeared about a new politician most Americans had never heard of. He was the man then in his first term as governor of Illinois, and his name was Stevenson. The rash of publicity appeared an organized, calculated event to the naked eye, but it was not. It was entirely the coincidence of reporters and editors, partly motivated by scuttlebutt amongst themselves, beating individual trails to the governor's mansion in Springfield and coming away considerably impressed. What they separately wrote had a remarkable collective result, and the Stevenson boom was born. This is by way of suggesting that something of the same kind of process, though on a less resounding scale, is quite likely to happen again. The potential beneficiary or victim of this process is Senator Albert Gore of Tennessee. He has been in the headlines occasionally, is right now, with his impressive proposals on limiting atomic weapons testing, but he remains pretty much a stranger to the country at large. In spite of 20 years in House and Senate, in spite of his record as one of the most effective senators of the last 2 or 3 years. The election this month suggests that the people want new faces and voices. The immediacy and saturation effect of modern communications not only creates a celebrity in a hurry, it can also wear out his welcome in a hurry. The potential Democratic candidates for president and vice president, Stevenson, Humphrey, Symington, Johnson, Minor, Williams, Kennedy, young as most of them be, are already unexcitingly familiar to professional observers here. And unless our own antenna is entirely corroded, we detect the beginnings of a shift of attention to Gore of Tennessee. If the keep the South in sentiment of the last two Democratic conventions prevails in 60, Gore as a Southerner would have much the same acceptability to the North as Stevenson, a Northerner, had to the South. And his Southern colleagues do not feel the same antipathy toward him that they felt toward Kefauver. This in spite of the fact that Gore refused to sign the Southern Manifesto on Segregation and did vote for the Civil Rights Bill. Gore knocked out the powerful Senator McKellar in the 52 primary, beat a popular former governor in this year's primary by an even greater margin, and won this month over his nominal Republican opposition by 80% of the vote, the highest winning margin in any senatorial contest in the country. Gore does not have Stevenson's brilliance, but he possesses relative youth, he's 50, personal attractiveness, and a driving, digging mind that has won the respect of Washington intellectuals. Quite a feat for a man whose degrees come from a teacher's college and a YMCA night course in law. If he does have national ambitions, he's his own worst enemy. He has no publicity sense or machinery. His official biography, the Congressional Directory, consists of exactly three lines. But there is something about him, as there was in a more incandescent way about Stevenson, that is very likely to draw the wavering spotlight in his direction in the months ahead. This is Eric Severide in Washington.